Hello, this is Mike Tony, shopkeeper at Ivy Hoops Online, presenting to you an edition of Inside Ivy Hoops this week with no intro music, no bells and whistles, just a laser-like focus on an Ivy League basketball season that continues to surprise. No Brett Franklin or Joe Glessner this week. Taking the week off, there's another surprise. Yale men's head coach James Jones will join me later in the show, but joining me now to talk, among other items, about the Penn men pounding Princeton in stunning fashion at Jadwin Gym Tuesday night is Ivy Hoops Online Princeton beat writer George Clark. George, thanks for coming on yet another podcast to impart your round ball knowledge. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, Michael. It's nice to be with you even during this bleak week for Tiger basketball.
Yes, so let's get right to it. Penn smacked Princeton in the second half Tuesday night en route to an 82-65 victory, its first win at Jadwin Gym since 2009, completing its first season sweep of the Tigers since 2008. I was in high school when Penn did those things. I graduated from Penn in 2014 and didn't really start covering red and blue basketball closely until the season after Zach Rosen graduated in 2012. So this whole dominating Princeton thing is new to me, George. What's your reaction to what happened at Jadwin Tuesday night?
I can't say that I was shocked because I saw the first game with Penn and I was very impressed by how well they played. That game was winnable for the Tigers, although Penn didn't really dominate them, but they played a very, very good game. Obviously, they're very well coached. This time, they came in extremely well prepared. What surprises me a little bit about Penn, Jackson Donahue, Sam Jones, and Jake Silkie were very, very highly regarded recruits when they came in. Those three kids played 2 minutes apiece against Princeton, and not much more in the first game. So Steve Donahue is relying on a core group of six players who played a game beautifully together. The second half, A.J. Broder was 8 of 10 from inside the arc. He didn't make a three-pointer, but Penn scored, I think they went 15 of 16 from inside the arc in the second period. Thursday night really exposed Princeton's lack of an interior defense. Pete Miller was a very, very valuable player, and of course, when he graduated and Will Glasson was unable to start the season healthy, it really has exposed the Princeton defense, and it puts a lack of defense, putting a great deal of stress on the offense. If it didn't hurt so much, I would really enjoy watching this Penn team. I think they're just playing beautifully together.
Yeah, and what's fascinating is Penn's roster is chock full of players whose roles on offense are interchangeable. A.J. Broder goes from passer to scorer from one half to the next at Jadwin. Darnell Foreman, typically a ball distributor, also becomes a scorer, taking what Princeton's defense generously gives him. All of Steve Donahue's players can pass the ball with precision in the paint and on the perimeter, and they have a top 40 defense nationally. It's also interesting that one of the knocks on Steve Donahue prior to him taking the Penn job 3 years ago was that his defenses at Boston College and Cornell left something to be desired, and there was a fear that he might not be able to assemble defenses as good as his offenses. And Penn this season has really been the opposite, delightfully, from a red and blue perspective. The defense is ranked 8th in the country in three-point percentage allowed on defense, and Max Rothschild and A.J. Broder are outstanding, not just as traditional rim protectors, but as long, strong front court stalwarts, athletic enough to step outside the paint and defend versatile scorers like Miles Stevens, for example, wherever they might be situated offensively. So what do you think Princeton can do about its defense, about its interior defensive struggles down the Ivy stretch, if anything, really?
What they were able to do last year was doubling down on the post, and they had it was as if the players were connected by a string. When they doubled down, other adjustments were made. The only other, the offensive team would have one open shooter who was at least two passes away from the player who was doubled down upon, and it was very difficult to score in those circumstances. This team is a step or a half a step slow in making, first in doubling down and then in adjusting. Broder had some great, he was unstoppable when he was defended by one player the other night, and oftentimes he was able to find somebody cutting when he was doubled to set up relatively easy baskets inside. And Princeton is just a step slow right now on defense, and I don't know at this point that you can say it's inexperienced because they played a lot of games. I'm not sure what they're going to be able to do, but they're going to have to turn it around on defense. They have enough weapons on offense to contend with anybody, but they can't. They have to stop people, and if they can't stop it, the pressure on the offense is just too much.
Yeah, if you'll allow me to...
Sanderson said in postgame against Penn, you are what your record says you are. We're 3-3 right now and struggling, and I think that's about where we are. In terms of making the tournament, that's pretty much in jeopardy at this point.
It is. You would think that Mitch Henderson and his staff are going to know what buttons to push down the stretch, even if the Tigers may not be quite as stellar as we thought. The one thing, if you allow me to get nerdy for a second, Princeton's turnover percentage on defense is the lowest it's been in the Ken Pom era dating back to 2001. So it's not, the defensive problems go beyond just the interior. It just doesn't seem to be quite as aggressive, and not just Tuesday night, but going back to other games. And in fact, let's do that pivot right now. Princeton had a couple of eventful games before Tuesday night too. An overtime win, an overtime loss. What were your thoughts from the matchups with Brown and Yale, having seen Princeton lose in overtime to one after beating the other in the extra period last weekend?
The performance that Desmond Chambers
Cambridge
Brown could put up, that performance was one of the best I've ever seen on the Jedwin floor, and I go back quite a few years. He was unconscious, and it was one of those nights. Princeton had a lead with four-point lead inside of a minute and couldn't hold it. And you just sensed that once Amir Bell fouled out, that we were going to have a real struggle in overtime, and we did. But you can't give up 102 points on your home court. That's an indication that something is seriously wrong with your defense. You score 100 and it's not enough. So we came out of that thinking we have to stop 10 on Tuesday night, and we just weren't prepared to do it. The Yale game was a very difficult game. If only doesn't foul out of that game, he wasn't real productive on offense that night, but he was a big factor, somebody who had to be, you had to pay attention to him at all times, and of course he's a pretty strong player on defense. So when he fouled out, that gave Princeton the advantage that it needed to hang on in overtime.
Well,
but it was a very, very tough weekend, that's for sure.
It was, yeah. I mean, from a Brown perspective, Desmond Cambridge and Brandon Anderson are first-team All-Ivy candidates for sure. If if Brandon Anderson goes to the foul line 14 times in a game, that's just another day at the office for him. He can draw contact and drill freebies all night long. And Desmond Cambridge, I think you already covered pretty well. The Ivy Rookie of the Year for sure, and really an electrifying surprise that hopefully isn't going anywhere anytime soon. Got a lot of compelling games this weekend. Penn looking for its first win since 2013 at Leed Arena. Princeton looking for just its second win at Leviades Pavilion in seven tries in the Mitch Henderson era. Meanwhile, Yale and Brown are taking on Columbia and Cornell, a grouping of travel partners that you would think will create some separation in the race for an Ivy tournament berth, since all those teams are bunched up at 3-3 and 2-4 in league play so far. What storylines are you looking forward to, George, this weekend on the men's side?
I think it's far more likely than not that Princeton, Columbia, and Brown are going to be just as bunched up after this weekend as they are now. I think Princeton would be very not satisfied, but hopefully we'll get a split in those two games. Dartmouth has given a lot of teams trouble. They've lost a lot of close games, but they usually give Princeton a lot of trouble up there. And again, as you pointed out, we've only won at Harvard once in the Henderson era, and that was an unbelievable finish that could have gone the other way in the blink of an eye. So
sure was.
If Princeton can get a split this weekend, they will still be very much in the race. What they have to avoid is a sweep.
Right, and on the shifting to the women's side, Princeton women got tripped up at Yale for their first Ivy loss before pushing past a reeling Brown squad up in Providence. How do you see the rest of the season playing out for Princeton? Any concerns at all that Courtney Banghart's team might fade a bit down the stretch as it did last year when it lost its three of its last four games in the regular season, or are the Tigers on steadier ground in this campaign?
I think they're on steadier ground than last year. I really do. That Friday night game last week was coming out of reading period. It's not an excuse, but when you don't really play for 3 weeks, anything can happen, and they got smacked. But they did rebound nicely. They've got Penn this Tuesday at home, and we'll be at, the women will be home tomorrow, Saturday, and then again Tuesday. I don't see them fading. I think maybe they'll get certainly lose to Penn. Penn's playing very, very well, but they should get two of the next three, and they're going to be comfortably in the tournament. I have no real fears about that.
Of course, Princeton's got Penn coming up on the women's side now. Another Tuesday evening matchup at Jadwin. In this case, following a homestand versus Harvard and then Dartmouth. Dartmouth, which, if the season ended today, would be the number 4 seed in the Ivy tourney, swept the C's last weekend and gets the P's this weekend. Bit of a test for Cy Lipold, Kate Lekowicz and company. Yale, meanwhile, gets Columbia and Cornell on the road next and really needs to deliver a sweep if it wants to establish itself as the front runner for a slot in the Ivy tourney. What amazes me, George, is that Ivy women's basketball continues to not get the attention I feel it has earned in recent years and continues to earn. Hashtag 2-bit Ivy actually happened with Penn and Princeton both getting in 2 years ago. And the Ivy League is ranked as the 9th best conference out of 32 Division I conferences, according to the CBN Women's College Basketball Ratings. For context, the Ivy League is only ranked 22nd out of 32 conferences on the men's side in a down year this season. Whether it's Camille Zimmerman or Bella Allery or Cy Lipold coming on, Ivy women's basketball is teeming with top flight talent, and really has been for quite a few years now. So those who follow Ivy men's basketball only are really missing out.
Well, that's certainly true, and the fact that the second bid was awarded in the recent past is an indicator that respect is growing for Ivy women's basketball. I don't know what's going to happen this year, but we could possibly see another two-bid year. Probably would be easier to get a second bid if Princeton wins the title, because Penn has a win over Villanova.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's going to happen again. There's no doubt it's going to happen again on the women's side, to be sure. Are you an Eagles fan, George?
I am a New York Giants fan. I've had a tough fall.
Oh, my. Yes, you have. Yeah, you've been through a lot this year. But turning over a new leaf, you got a new GM, you got a new coach. See, that's why people really come to Ivy Hoops Online, is the NFC East talk. That's really what they come for. All righty. Well, thanks for stopping by, George. It's always such a joy to connect with you.
Well, Mike, I appreciate the invitation very much, and I'm looking forward to seeing our customary hosts on Saturday night up in Hanover. I'm certainly going to stop by and say hello to them. They have done a very nice job on this program.
They really have, and I'm sure they'll be happy to see you too, George. That'll be a great meeting of the minds up in Hanover, for sure.
You're very kind, my friend.
All right. Take care.
I'll be looking forward to hearing your interview with Coach Jones.
Indeed. It's a good one. It's going to be a good one.
Great. Thanks very much.
Mm-hmm.